Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's Political Commentary.
With Dr. Bryce Edwards. Morena Bryce, how are you?
Morena Rachel, I'm great.
It's great to have you back on the show. It's been a wee while and plenty to talk about as well.
Well, the election is heating up, and one of the best things about elections is policy debate.
Yes.
It might sound boring, but it is actually really important, and it actually gives a chance for the parties to say how they might change the world and make it better. And so we've got the Green Party this week with having their big announcement about welfare and taxation. And so I think that's been really important. Yeah.
I was going to say, this is probably one of the biggest announcements we've seen recently as well from a party coming out kind of swinging with a pretty heavy-hitting policy. What are your thoughts about this? What is the proposal, first of all, and what are your thoughts on it, Bryce?
Sure. So the Greens have announced that they're going to change welfare and they're going to introduce a new payment, which is a guaranteed minimum income. And it basically is for anyone that's not in full-time work. So students, retired people, part-time workers would receive a payment of $325 a week. So that's a big increase on what they currently get.
Mm-hmm.
And it would you wouldn't have to answer any questions about your, you know, what you're doing with your time or anything. So it's a very generous payment, and it will be paid for by increased taxation, a bit more income tax for those at the top end, but most controversially, a wealth tax. And this would be levied on people with assets of over $1 million, and only you'd be paying 1% of the value of anything over $1 million per person. So if you're a couple, for example, and you own a $2 million house, you wouldn't pay anything on that first $2 million, but anything of that asset that's over that. So if it's $2.1 million, you'd pay 1% of that, what's over that amount, over that threshold. So the Greens say it would raise about $8 billion a year, and it would pay for that generous welfare scheme. So it's a bit of a game changer, and it's something that I think they really needed to do for holding on to some of that left-wing support that had become a bit disillusioned that the Greens maybe hadn't achieved enough in government and maybe that Labour had not been transformative enough.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a game changer in that respect.
We sort of the last time we saw a really massive conversation about new forms of taxation was possibly capital gains tax, I guess,
exactly,
in New Zealand. And that kind of disappointed a lot of people when it wasn't brought through by this government or when the Labour Party said they were going to, you know, not pursue it necessarily. Do you think that this is going to maybe, I guess, reignite some of those debates that we saw around the capital gains time?
Yeah, so that's kind of unfinished business for the left, that you know, there's a need, it's felt, for some sort of bigger taxation of assets and wealth in New Zealand, because in New Zealand we don't really tend to tax these things. We really only tax income, spending and corporate profits. And so this is an attempt by the left to bring in, sorry, by the Greens to bring in another version of a capital gains tax that's only on assets. And I think especially since we've gone into, well, since we've had COVID, we're going into a recession, there's going to be a much more interest in, I guess, inequality, poverty, and how to fix those things with greater revenue. So, yes, I do think this kind of fits the zeitgeist at the moment.
Well, one thing that has sort of come out of this as well is the National Party saying that they wouldn't increase a wealth tax if they were in power. I'm quite interested, have you seen anything or any indications from the National Party about how they would be dealing with those inequities and inequalities that we are going to inevitably see increase through this recession period? Have you seen any indication from them about that, Bryce?
No, in fact, the National haven't really put forward a lot of policy at the moment, and traditionally parties of the right, you know, aren't particularly, they'll give lots of lip service and talk about wanting to raise people's incomes by giving them jobs. And we have seen those billboards from National about more jobs, better economy. And that's really their, you know, typical right-wing answers to these things. In terms of welfare, of course, no, we're not seeing any real promises, any regard around welfare or inequality, I don't believe.
Speaking of the National Party, this kind of segues us into our next topic, which of course is Paula Bennett announcing that she is not going to be running in the next election and she is stepping back from politics, moving into business. This is going to mean a big reshuffle for the National Caucus, and it is also going to leave a hole in the role of cannabis reform spokesperson for the National Party, which is a major one in a referendum year. What do you think we're going to see in this reshuffle from the National Party caucus, and especially in that cannabis position?
Well, National's had a big problem with reshuffles lately, with Todd Muller's first reshuffle leaving a very white front bench. And so this is a chance, perhaps, for Todd Muller to rectify some of those mistakes, I think. And we'd like to see both Shane Retty and Simon Bridges elevated to give some people of colour, some Māori, onto at least probably the top 15 of the National front bench. But I guess we're seeing a lot of flux in the National Party. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not really, well, they're in a lot of turmoil, partly because they've had to change leader. And that's really why we're seeing Paula Bennett departing. We're also seeing Anne Tolley announcing her retirement. But the Bennett departure is, of course, because she's unhappy with that change of leadership and the fact that she has been pushed so much further down. So National, I think, are going to have a lot of trouble kind of convincing their voters that they aren't in trouble, really, because, you know, of certainly the polls and the fact that some of their main players are leaving the ship.
I'm quite interested in something that you just mentioned there as well. They have, of course, been criticised for a lack of diversity in those front benches, and we might see some Māori MPs moving up the ranks a little bit now as well. But something that got flagged actually in the last couple of days was a comment that Todd Muller made about lack of LGBTQIA representation in those front benches as well. And he said, it's not something I'm particularly focused on, ensuring that we find someone who may or may not represent the LGBTI community. Do you think that the National Party is possibly maybe alienating, or has the potential to alienate some possible voters through this kind of rhetoric? Do you think that's something they should be concerned about, Bryce?
Well, it's traditionally the policy, I guess, of those on the right to, you know, appoint on the basis of merit, and really Todd Muller's continuing to push that line, that they're not being, you know, dictated by identity politics or that diversity sort of trend. And that, I think that policy will actually appeal to a lot of people. A lot of women, a lot of Māori, will think that's an acceptable way to, you know, govern the party. But, yeah, of course, a lot will disagree with it. The one about sexual orientation, I think, is a particularly difficult one for all parties, really. But particularly because, you know, obviously some MPs choose not to be public about their sexual orientation. And so it's always difficult with National, I think, because like other parties, they obviously have people with some diversity in that regard, but that MPs that don't necessarily aren't out, shall we say. So I think there's probably going to be a bit more debate about the merits of that.
Well, third topic that we've got to talk about before we let you go, Bryce, is what is going on with the fisheries, New Zealand First, and all this donations debacle. Can you give us a quick fill-in on what this whole situation is?
Yeah, so environmentalists have been pushing for many years to get cameras on boats, because deep-sea fishing boats have a habit of fishing lots of things they're not supposed to pull up, like dolphins, and they're supposed to report the things that go wrong. There's a feeling that they don't do this, but if you put cameras on boats, they tend to be more honest about these things. But in the last government, they actually decided to put cameras on boats, but the new government has actually held that up for reasons that aren't very clear. But for a long time, people have been suspicious that it's been New Zealand First that have been essentially vetoing putting the cameras on boats. And there's a lot of suspicions because New Zealand First are very close to lots of corporates in the fishing industry, that maybe they're being pressured. And, of course, New Zealand First does receive a lot of donations from those fishing corporates. So this week we've had a leaked recording come out that involves mm-hmm. Stuart Nash, the Minister of Fisheries, essentially blaming New Zealand First. This recording was from about 2 years ago, and he is essentially saying that it's New Zealand First that are holding up the implementation of these cameras. And so it raises big questions about whether vested interests, whether these corporates in fishing are, in some ways stopping a good piece of public policy from being implemented and to our environmental detriment.
Well, certainly that is going to be a big ongoing topic, as all of these are. So thank you so much for your time this morning, Bryce. It's a pleasure to have you back on the show, and we'll talk to you again very soon.
Cheers, Rachel.
Thanks.
You just heard a bit of political commentary
with